2020, Ulsan Hyundai.
You're listening to the K-League United podcast, proud partner of Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm going to say, Ryan Walters in the K-League United bunker this week, and we have guests from all around the country joining this week, just like it was an opening weekend all over the country. This week, I am joined by usual host, Matthew Binns.
Hello.
And with the ET headset in full effect is Pete Hampshire.
Hello, gentlemen. Hope you're enjoying that red glow.
To be fair, you did try to get rid of it, and I said, no. It stays. So for those of you watching live, you can know what we're talking about. For those of you on the podcast, it's a perfect excuse to watch us live on all of our social media channels. But gentlemen, before we get into it, I feel there's one very important thing to start with, and that's that I have made it to week two of K-League Survivor without losing a life, thanks to my beloved Jeon and Dragons.
Well, I haven't, I'm afraid. one week in, I've already lost a life. A plump for Gyeongnam. I think there was seven people who joined me there, and Anyang pulled it out of the bag, and I was sat next to Binns at the Jeonbuk game thinking, I've already lost a life.
I didn't notice that Anyang won.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. You know what? It's an Austin Berry match worn kit. That's the only reason I have an Anyang kit. It's the only reason. But I figured I'd wear it today just to troll Pete a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I plumped for Seoul Eland, and thinking I was going to drink Michael. But it worked out, didn't it? So I'm still in it, three lives. Yeah.
I'm actually a little surprised that you and Pete both have all of your nine cat lives left after the weekend you had in Jeonju, but we'll leave that for another podcast of Interventions Weekly. But you brought up Big Michael. Big Michael will be joining us in a little bit because we have five things to talk about from the opening round. We're going to start where you guys started the K-League season, where the K-League 1 season started in Jeonju. We're going to be talking about Jeonbuk's win over FC Seoul and whether or not that was convincing. We're just going to hear your post-match comments, actually. And then we're going to come back. We're going to kick Matthew out. We're going to bring in Big Michael, and we're going to talk about Seoul Eland winning for the very first time on opening day, a thumping 3-0 victory over Busan I Park. And then we're going to stay in K2 for that segment. We're going to talk about FC Anyang, and the surprises started early in K-League 2 because the very first match of the season saw an upset with FC Anyang beating Gyeongnam FC. We should say promotion contenders Gyeongnam FC. We'll take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about Ulsan. Speaking of destroying, oh my. Ulsan started their season with a 5-0 victory over Gangwon FC. I'm feeling great about that Gangwon pick where I have them in the table right now. And then we're going to finish things up talking about the U22 rule and all of the confusion and the ridiculous amount of substitutions it caused. And then we're going to have the mailbag. So, gentlemen, without any further ado, before we hear from you more here live, we are going to go to your post-match coverage from Jeonbuk versus Seoul. But before we do that, Matthew, was there anything that you really wanted to get in about this match before we kick you out and bring Michael in?
Well, Jeonbuk made it 10 wins, not 10 wins, but unbeaten in 10, defeated FC Seoul again. Yeah, it's a great weekend, great opener.
Yeah, and the last time that they lost on opening weekend was some plucky team from down south named the Jeonnam Dragons. Ah, go on, Dragons. Anyway, here's what Matt and Pete had to say post-match.
The first half wasn't exactly a classic, Peter, was it?
Yeah, the first half was really easy. I thought before the game that FC Seoul would have a good chance today. Ki Sung-young started well, but clearly not match fit because he got taken off after around 35 minutes. And that's the part of the game where I thought Seoul's control of midfield left, actually, when Ki was withdrawn. But then in the second, with the substitutions, Ilyichenko coming on especially, I thought, Jeonbuk deserved the win.
Ilyichenko came on for Gustavo. Gustavo probably building the case for his own argument to be recalled from play because, well, he missed quite the chance before the interval.
Yeah, it was a header from about 6 yards out. It was a great cross in by Young, by the way.
No, he did really well today again. Young, very reliable as always. But yeah, Gustavo missing from 6 yards. And I can only assume his heart sank when what originally looked like Ilyichenko's goal, it was announced in the stadium here as Ilyichenko's goal. It turned out it was actually Kim Won-gun who was jostling with Ilyichenko for the header and converted Kim Bok-young's cross in. But yeah, you can only feel Gustavo's heart sink it a little bit that Ilyichenko's come in, and perhaps competition for his place is going to be very high.
I know it's only been one game, but judging from Kim Shanshik's tactics today, is going to stick with that one up front that we saw last season here at John Book. So yeah, it's one or the other.
Let's just quickly mention that Barrow did get a goal. He scored it. It came on at the end. It was just a little tap in from close range, but sealed the points. And another good showing from him. Hopefully he'll be looking for a start in the near future, depending how this under 22 rule works. But we should talk about the visitors. Park Jin Sup, new manager at FC Seoul. Did you see flashes of his Gwangju management style here today?
Well, I've been building Hong Joon Ho up all winter, the centre-back, the new signing from Gwangju, and he was on the bench. But Park Jin Sup's style at Gwangju was all-out attack and just take the risk, and that's why they finished sixth last season. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem. I know they're away to Jeonbuk, so perhaps you can't do that, but they seemed a bit more reserved. Today, FC Seoul, Palasevich, I noticed, was playing very close to Park Chu-young up top. Quite a bit of a different role to what he was playing at Pohang Steelers last year, where he was a bit deeper than he was today. And he didn't get that much joy, actually, Palasevich. I think Jeonbuk nullified him well. Same for Park Chu-young, he didn't get much joy either.
Yeah, I felt the work from the centre-back from Jung-ho. Kim Min-hyuk, I think Kim Min-hyuk had a very good day, and it was a very good birthday to Kim Min-hyuk as well. We were ready with that tweet, and it was like, come on, get the goal, and it just... No, we didn't get to use the birthday cake emoji today. But no, yeah, I think they did nullify the threat from Palosevic very well. Do you think Seoul then are lacking a striker? Because there was always talk that they might go for Felipe, Park Jin-sup might raid his old club once more. Or do you think Gwangju are just hiding him somewhere, Felipe, disconnected the fax machine? And
I wouldn't blame them, because if Felipe leaves as well, then Gwangju are really in the mire. But I think 100% need a different option as a number nine. You see Jeonbuk today with two fantastic number nines, so be envious of that. Mm-hmm. Because Na Sang-ho, who had a good first half today, I thought.
Yeah,
he can't do it all on his own. He's not an out-and-out fox-in-the-box striker. He's more of a creator, so they need that someone to finish the chances, for sure.
But still shoots of optimism if you're an FC Seoul fan. Well, I mean, the transfer window is still open. There's still chances for FC Seoul to get somebody in. And up front is probably where they should be looking. Anyway, that's it for us. They are packing up around us in this stadium. And we're probably going to have to get on. So
nothing. Matthew's gone. And in comes Michael Redmond. Michael, welcome. You had something of a difficult journey to get back to Seoul, but you are back in the capital area right now, and you are back with the first ever opening day win for Seoul Eland, a 3-0 victory. And what I want to start with was, how were you feeling in the stands at halftime when it was 0-0?
So, well, can I just first say what an amazing weekend. I've just had a boost on planes, trains and automobiles to get me up and down from Seoul. And back. I've had flights cancelled. I've been on big night trains. It's been one of the best away days ever. And I've been following this team for 4 years now. Incredible. When it was 0-0 at halftime, I was speaking to other Eland fans before the game, and I said, we're going to nick this today 1-0. I think we're more prepared. I think we're the better team here. I generally thought we were going to nick it 1-0. Then, during the game, you know, Eland looked very organised. I think Busan's biggest chance happened like the 43rd minute when he had a shot on target. It was saved well. Kim Kung-min saved very well. But I still thought we were going to nick it at half-time. But a completely different team came out in that second half, and they just tore Busan to shreds. Now, don't get me wrong, Busan had flourishes in that game, but you'd have thought Eland were the team that got relegated. You'd have thought they were the K-League 1 team last year. Looking at them, they were organised, they knew how to pass the ball well. They looked like a gelled unit, which is something that we saw last year. I was in my element on Sunday watching that game, because I couldn't believe how well they were playing one another. Mm-hmm. Kim Son-min just literally jumped at every single ball. He just ran for everything in that game, and I had a fantastic game. Look at it, when Isan Min scores against you, there's something wrong with your side, isn't there? So,
yeah, I mean, a barnstorming second half, like you say, all three goals in the second half. And yeah, I think for me, you know, it's one game and it's opening weekend, but it really did show intent, I think, because we talked about this a lot preseason of how Elan built and how they were managed to keep most of that spine together and to build on this project. Whereas Pete, we'll bring you in here. Busan didn't exactly look the part of a team that's going to be back in that promotion relegation playoff for the, what, I think 200th time in their existence.
Yeah, well, a lot of the winter transfer movement was for youngsters, wasn't it? And there was so much Ulsan involvement in that game. Michael just mentioned Lee Sang-min, but, you know, they've got Cheju and Lee Sang-hon and Park Jong-in, who were all nullified in that game. And am I right in thinking they were shooting towards you in the second half, Michael, Eland?
Elan were shooting towards me. Yeah. We were lucky enough right on the side where the players were warming up and thank you for all three goals.
Yeah, because I've been to a lot of games at the Goo Dock, so and I went to that one with you that time, Michael, where I took my Yorkshire flag over to you, and there was you weren't too happy about that one. In terms of Busan, obviously, new manager Ricardo Perez is talking to Todd Wilde, our Busan columnist, one of our Busan columnists. He's got some interesting ideas in terms of getting the players involved with yoga and meditation. And you have to think if they have a poor start to the season, then sometimes those out there ideas, they go cold very quickly, don't they? And players might not take to it if it's not a good start.
Yeah, a rough start for life in Busan, indeed. Michael, before we move on here, because we are going to talk about K-League 2 again, because as people are now finding out, any new fans to the K-League, as you're finding out, this is where the party is. Who would you say, if you had to pick one person from Elan that was like the standout player or just somebody that you were impressed with, who would you say that would have been from the opening game?
Well, I think I say his name almost every single podcast. You know, I'm a big fan of him. You know who I'm going to say. Leandro. Like, he did two assists. He had two assists in the game against Busan. People said he might have been a little bit quiet in that game because he didn't score, but you should have seen him behind the scenes setting people up, going on runs. Literally, what I liked at going back to Kim Sun-min, he was in the middle trying to chase and get down that ball, but you could see Leandro making these runs and giving Elan space to passing the ball and going a run. The second goal started from Elan's half, and Leandro just ran the ball forward. He just brings a fire to this team that hasn't been seen before in this side, and Chun Jun Yong has now got players around him that can A, get the ball off him when he sends a good crossover or good pass, and B, can support him on going on his own runs and probably try and score. I'm just lost for words. I'm still very excited over what happened on Sunday evening.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones where it felt like Saturday to me. The K-League cat's on the table, by the way.
Get out of here.
And my lights are going out. Okay. Oh boy, I love my cat. Anyway, I'll take care of that at a break. Let's move on. The joy of the live show. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about FC Anyang and their surprising win over Gyeongnam FC. And this one, I mean, Anyang's one of those teams that they were really fighting off relegation. They were fighting the bottom of the table last year, and I did not see this one coming. Michael, what was it about Anyang, however much you were able to watch this, because I know you were traveling this weekend, but what was it about them that allowed them to pull this one off?
They just look more prepared than Gyeongnam. They probably saw the off season and they saw Gyeongnam and go, you know what, lads, we've got absolutely nothing to lose here. And they probably just went for it and they caught Gyeongnam off cold. But you must remember Gyeongnam started slow last year as well, and then they came back into it. So true. You know, this is 2 years in a row now where I don't know if they lost the opening game of the season last year, but they started very, very slowly. So maybe it's a thing that it takes Gyeongnam a while to start getting them gears turning. Anyang, begrudgingly though, they showed off really basically on that game. They had a penalty saved as well. Mm-hmm. We were talking about it before coming on air. It could have been 3-1.
Yeah, and you could argue it probably should have been, but indeed they looked good. And Shim Dong-eun was the one that got the scoring started this year, the very first goal in K-League 1 or 2 this season. But Pete, I want to come to you here. The second goal, the match-winning goals it ended up being, was from your boy. It was from Meng Sung-eun. And is this something that we're going to see more of from him this year?
Yeah, they did well on Yang to keep hold of Nilsson Jr., Meng Sung-eun, mm-hmm. and they brought Baek Dong-gyu back as well from Jeju. I hope so. Through that goal that he scored, he showed some nice awareness and he was on his toes. I know, obviously, it was a tap-in, but you've got to be in the right place at the right time,
exactly.
haven't you?
Yeah, an impressive performance from Anyang in a team that, this is one of the things that we love about K-League 2. Last year, Bucheon were near the top of the table for a little bit. Seoul Eland are top of the table right now, and Michael, based on preseason predictions, they're going to stay near there. But also, you know, this isn't actually part of this segment, but Gimcheon almost went lost opening day against the Ansan Greeners. So all sorts of interesting things going on in K2 as always, but we're going to leave it there for now because we're going to move on expediently. We're going to keep this thing moving and we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and we are going to talk about Gangwon FC and the opening weekend that was for them. And for this one, we're bidding adieu to Michael. Michael, thank you so much for joining us briefly. And for the rest of you, we'll be right back, hopefully with better lighting for me, minus a cat on the table. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email KLU at info@kleagueunited.com or tweet at K-League United with any questions, comments, or reactions. Or follow us on Facebook to ask directly during one of our live shows.
Welcome back to the K-League United podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Walters, and I am joined virtually this week. He's back once again, Matthew Binns.
Hello again.
I promise, Matthew, eventually we are going to let you speak. But it's going to happen this week. The cat, by the way, misses you.
I do not miss him at all. No love towards him at all.
Rude. Pete Hampshire's also here. Pete, how are we doing?
I'm doing well. I'm just envious of Matthew's new fridge.
Oh, yes. Mercifully, we can't hear it in the background right now, but Matthew does have a massive new fridge in the K-League Outpost. Is that what we call it? Yeah, yours is the KLU Outpost.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be the new headquarters based on the size of this fridge. I think I'm stocked up for just in case I get put under quarantine or social distancing or anything. I can get an old supermarket in this thing. It's massive.
Gonna be good to go.
For the ones watching.
All right. As riveting as all of this is, we're gonna move back to the football real quick. This is why you haven't been able to talk yet, Matt. I knew it was coming. You're just too excited about the fridge. Speaking of being excited about things, I was with Dan Croydon on Monday. I have to keep reminding myself it was Monday because it's a holiday here in Korea. I was with Dan as Ulsan Hyundai put 5 up on Gangwon FC, and here's what we had to say post-match. The floodgates really opened up in the second half there. There was a red card for Gangwon, and then that's when 4 of the 5 goals came in. But on the whole, I thought Ulsan looked pretty good before that as well, yeah?
Yeah, first half, I think we were feeling them out. I definitely think Gangwon came with a game plan to sit deep. Mm-hmm. They had 5 at the back at times at the beginning of the first half. Trying to hit us on the break. It could have had a couple of goals in the first half. But yeah, we went in 1-0 up with Yumbik Garam with another awesome free kick. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the red card in the second half really changed the game. And that's when we found a way through. Gangwon just couldn't cope with our pace.
Yeah. I think that's the moment that we'll look back on as the red card. But there could have been a goal in the opening 3 minutes. Ko Mu-yeol probably should have scored, but hit it right at Choyun-woo instead. And so it seemed like Gangwon had a chance, but we talked about this a little bit during the game. A very odd tactic for Gangwon and Byung-soo Ball, as we know and love it, for them to sit back and try to hit on the counter. Usually there's a team that wants to keep possession. Do you think that's what did them in today?
I think we were just maybe, Ulsan were just a bit fitter. Okay. I think Gangwon were second to some balls and so decided to, you know, see out the first half and then maybe if they could get a goal in the second half. Mm-hmm. You know, that was looking for the classic away performance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as I said, the red card put paid to that plan. But yeah, perhaps they were going to open up a bit more second half after keeping it tight in the first.
Which they did do a decent job of keeping it tight in the first half, with the exception of a little bit of magic from Yunbit Garam. I mean, this is somebody that you've picked as your season MVP. And I mean, there were a lot of players that had a lot of good shifts for Ulsan today, and we'll talk about that. But talk just a little bit about what you saw from him today.
He really ran the midfield there. He seemed mm-hmm. to be always finding space, always having 2 or 3 yards around him, head up alongside Wandu Jay was also fantastic. Yeah, second half, we got a lot of space in the middle. And if you give Yunbit Garam space, he's going to pick some awesome passes.
Yeah, and speaking of giving a little bit too much space, Kim In-sung got a brace within 10 minutes in the second half there. I think he finished with 2 goals, and I'm not entirely sure he had a great game. I mean, well finished on the ones that he got, but, you know, that is against a 10-man Gangwon. And I think if we're trying to have something to nitpick on Ulsan today, and why not? I guess, why not? But, I mean, they looked fantastic overall, but I think he'll want to be a little bit sharper a little bit earlier on. But as we were talking about, he did well with the chances that he got. But somebody that I think we need to talk about before we get out of here, there was a young player for you guys that was very impressive today.
Yeah, first half, they gave the debut to a 18-year-old, Kang Yun-gu. He signed straight from high school. Don't know much about him at all. He came on briefly in the Club World Cup, but he got the start today. And he played the full first half.
Right.
We've seen quite a few teams rake younger players off after 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. We made the comment that no one was warming up after 20 minutes here. So that was something that's quite refreshing to see.
Yeah.
And yeah, he, again, playing alongside those two fantastic midfielders in Wandu Jay and Yunbit Garam, mm-hmm. he didn't look out of place. He really played some good, positive forward mm-hmm. balls and always had his head up. So yeah, great debut from him.
Yeah, and I loved how aggressive he was going forward. And this was in the first half that he just looked comfortable on the ball and was part of that attack from the beginning. A really good debut for him. And again, we got to talk about debuts. Lee Dong-jun, this is his first official match in K-League for Ulsan, and pretty good stuff.
Right. He really kicked it up in the second half there. He seemed to find another gear in terms of pace. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looked a slightly harsh red card, I've got to say.
Sure.
With my neutral hat on, I think he...
That's the neutral hat?
This is the official neutral hat. Okay. But yeah, you could make the case that he was going to be the last man just because of the angle that the Lee Dong-jun was mm-hmm. running at. Mm-hmm. But he put so much pressure on those defenders at the beginning of the second half that he really earned, the chance to get that red card. You know, he did it just before as well. He got to the byline after nicking the ball in the final third. And then, of course, his goal. That was a fantastic finish. There's the coolest of little chips over the keeper.
Just hold L1, boys and girls. Just hold L1 and then you got it. You're good to go. But yeah, I thought a really good debut from him. And we saw Hong Meng Bo being interviewed afterwards, gets his league campaign off to a winning start. A lot of positives from Ulsan today, a team that Dan's obviously partial to and one that I picked to win the league. So I'm happy about that as well today.
That's right, Matthew. A team I picked to win the league, and they looked good. All right, anyway.
If you're predicting them, then that's good news for me, really.
That's a fair point, actually. All right, so something that Dan and I touched on there, something that you guys touched on post-match as well, is this U22 rule. Okay, so this is the fifth thing. This is the last thing that we're going to be talking about from opening weekend before we open up the mailbag a little bit earlier this week than usual. We are also trying to stick to the 45-minute pod that people requested preseason. We haven't done great with that. We'll see how it goes today. Anyway, the U22 rule. This was all sorts of interesting. All right, so let's just go over this. The U22 rule, as of right now, if there's one U22 player in the starting 11 plus one on the bench, that means that there's 7 subs. Okay, so if we break it down this way, if there are 0 U22 players, that means there's 2 subs allowed. If there's 1 in the starting 11, 3 subs allowed. 1 in the starting 11 and 1 is brought on as a sub, that's where we get the 5 subs allowed. And if there are 2 U22 players starting, then that means that there are also 5 substitutes allowed. All right, so it seems somewhat simple, I guess, based on that. But what this ended up being in practice, and we saw this in a lot of matches, and this is why Dan and I were kind of laughing about it at Ulsan, which was one of the last matches of the round. We were seeing 15-minute substitutions. We were seeing 20-minute double substitutions, things like that, all weekend long. And I know you guys have some opinions about this. So, Matthew, you finally get to speak this episode. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you for welcoming me to the pod. Yeah,
It's good. It's good to have you. It's good to have you, Matthew. You and your fridge are very welcome this week. But before you get back onto your refrigerator, what's your takeaway from this rule? Because I think in theory, at the beginning of the season, we thought, oh, this might be interesting. But the way that it was implied was... Yeah.
Well, I think first it should be noted that it was being abused before when it was just standard three substitutes, not to this extent. What has happened is by turning it into five subs, it's allowed for exploitation of the rule. And I think we've seen, well, there was four offenders over the weekend. But first, hat tip to Paul Neat in pointing me in the direction of this fact. But in 2020, when it was just three subs, there was 44 occasions where under 22 players were hauled off before half time, nearly all tactical, not due to injuries. So the 44 occasions, that's across both leagues, but still, we've probably got a couple of managers in mind who were regular offenders of that. I think what two shocking things from this weekend is one of them was a team that actually doesn't do this, opted to do it first, and that would be Jumbuck. But also this record, well, the earliest a substitution was made in 2020 was the 27th minute. This record was broken four times this weekend by four different teams. So the first one of the weekend was Jumbuck. And as I said, this is not really a team that does this. I know Jumbuck gets a lot of negative criticism for their youth. I think a lot of unwarranted criticism because people are quick to forget some of their youthful players. But this was awful. They took off, manager Kim Sang-shik got his new reign kicked off by taking off Lee Sung-yun on 22 minutes. He did bring on a goalkeeper, under 22 goalkeeper, to utilise the five subs. Now, I have to have backtrack slightly on what I initially said on this because it turns out Hankyo Won is suffering with an injury. So what had happened is Jumbuck could use three substitutes. And they wanted to take Hankyo Won off, but they could only take him off if they brought on an under 22 player, but the under 22 player was a goalkeeper, so they had to switch goalkeepers so then they could play the fifth substitute. So that's what happened with the second substitute with a goalkeeper. That might not happen every weekend, but still, Lee Sung-yun coming off after 22 minutes, that's appalling, to be honest. It's quite frankly embarrassing. Suwon FC were the worst offenders of the weekend. Suwon manager Kim Do-kyun opted for 16th minute removals of both starting under 22 players, Cho Sang-jun and Lee Gi-hyuk. Suwon also had the worst record for offering youth minutes in the second division last year, which is ironic given the manager's links to Ulsan's youth team. And clearly, Ulsan must have realised he wasn't very good at nurturing talent, as he probably kept trying to move them on after time. But yeah, Incheon United were also offenders of the weekend. They also, well, manager Cho Sung-hwan, let's name the managers taking them off, removed both Park Chang-hwan and Kim Chae-eun on the 22nd minute. And Jeju United manager Nam Ki-il took off Lee Kyu-hyuk in the 23rd minute, but admittedly he did replace that under 22 player with another under 22 player in Lee Dong-ro. It's not good, as far as I'm concerned. It's not breaking the rules, but it's not in the spirit of the rule. Either the original rule, the under 23 rule as it was originally, was brought in 2016 to give youth a chance. And the K-League is only two divisions. There's only 22 professional teams. There aren't that many opportunities. So this rule was kind of just to make sure that these young players were getting action in the side. And yet, this isn't in the spirit of the game. It's not breaking any rules, but it's not in the spirit of it.
Yeah, I think the thing that gets me on it is that I don't really see the huge tactical advantage of that 15 minutes in the first half, right? Like if you've got somebody at the end of the game that's tired and you need to bring on some fresh legs, that makes sense. But a lot of times what we're getting here is the young players that would have the fresh legs being brought off for the more veteran players 15 minutes into the half, 20 minutes into the half. So they're going to run around for 20 minutes, take a break, and then come back out. So, I mean, yeah, it's saving them a little bit of running, but I mean, it's also just kind of, it's just stalling the opening frame, really. I mean, because then we've got two teams that are just kind of like dealing with it and just kind of like waiting for those inevitable substitutions to come, which is why it was refreshing to not see that in Ulsan. But Pete, I'll bring you in here. Is this something that that we're going to see more of? Or actually, you know what? I'll bring you in here with a question, okay? Because we had an early podcast question. Yes, they're all podcast questions, Ryan. Oof, an early OG Luis mailbag question. This is from Corners of the World via Twitter, asking, should the league attempt to introduce something similar to the rule in Venezuela, where a U22 player can only be subbed off for another player that fills the requirement to resolve this currently chaotic situations? It's kind of like that, but do you think it would be better if it was a very strict like-for-like, like a U22 for a U22?
So what Jeju did at the weekend, that situation. And Jeju were bringing on one of their key men in Dongil because he made a huge impact as well. I really hope it doesn't continue in this vein, because we watched Lee Sung-yoon traipse around the edge of the pitch and front three edges of the pitch. I mean, he was clapping the fans, but you've got to think of the mental aspect when if you're doing that every week. Predetermined substitutions. Yeah, hopefully not. And also those two Suwon players, I think I'm right in saying it was their first minutes in K-League. So they're going to remember that their debut in the K-League is a 15-minute debut. I mean, and they're not coming on. Usually you see these kind of kids coming on when you're 3-0 up and you know they're not going to affect and they can have the freedom. But these players have got full pressure on them to start the game well before the more established players come on.
Yeah. Matt?
I think there's two things to say. I mean, first thing, how do you solve it now? I mean, it can't be solved now. The league's already in play. The rules are made when you go into the league. I think what should be done, though, is it should be called out. It should be called out by fans, should be called out by media, should be called out by the K-League themselves, because it's just not in the spirit of it. It's not what the rule was intended for. Sure, you know, maybe later down the line, give fines for repeat offenders. I think Suwon FC have shown that they have blatant disregard for the rule for the last season, and they look like they very much want to continue with it this season. I guess you're looking to how to solve it later. Like if for heaven forbid we're not continuing with five subs next season, hopefully COVID's under control and we can go back down to three. If we're somehow dealing with five subs next season, then maybe we just say it's better that you can make five substitutes, but you can only if two of them are under 22, because that way, you know, sure, they may still get less minutes, but at least they're coming on with a purpose. You know, at the moment, they're just coming on knowing they're going to get taken off. If they're coming on as a tactical change, then at least they've got some worth. At the moment, they've got no kind of worth to them. It's just dispiriting. And yeah, as Peter said, we have to watch Lee Sung-yeon do a traipse around the whole pitch, and I shouldn't be laughing, but it was so farcical. It bordered on comedy. And it's, I don't know, like, it brings me to the idea, is there any point in the rule in the first place, whether three subs or five subs?
Like, especially because
teams, they're under 22 players, are the best players, like Pohang, Song Yes. Kyu, Gwangju, Omwon Sang. So they're already going to be playing anyway. So,
yeah. I mean, well, I also wonder how long we'll really see teams do this. You know, like the K1 teams right now, especially the ACL teams, they got a lot of games coming up really quickly. So it makes sense to keep the rotation high right now and keep people fresh. But after that ACL break, after that 6-week ACL break that we have coming up, when they come back, if I'm a manager, I don't really care if I get five subs. I'm going to put out my lineup as I usually would with a U22 player out there, and I'll have three subs and manage it like I've managed every game for my entire life, you know? Like, to me, it's kind of convoluting things. And what I really, again, for me, the thing that I really don't like about it is that it's just stalling that opening 15, 20 minutes where we could see something exciting happen in that opening period. And it, to me, it's just kind of delaying that. But I don't want to belabor it too much. But go, Pete, one last thing, then we'll move on.
I was going to say it could be an interesting Saturday piece to see the not to 15 minutes goal scored.
Right.
And reference that with the substitutes made.
Yeah, indeed. Paul, if you're listening. Matthew, it looks like you had one more thing, then we'll take a break.
I mean, it was a couple, but I'll try and just get to one point. I mean, the positives are, we have seen results on the national team front with it, I guess. Like, the Asian mm-hmm. Cup probably wouldn't have happened without the under-22 rule. And yeah, okay, there's 44 offences last season, but, you know, for the most part, most teams are playing by the rule. I think the problem for me is, like, also, youth players in general aren't treated well in this country, I don't think. I mean, there's rookie contracts, which we've gone through in previous podcasts, yeah. when we're talking about the transfer of Kim Min-jae to Beijing Guoan and the absolute pittance he was on. And I don't think, like, I mean, that should be an incentive enough for a team to play youth players, because they can get them for nothing. Like, you know, you've got these players, but I guess that means they don't put any value in them. It's got the reverse effect of the incentive, you know, that it's like, yeah. well, you know, does it really matter if we don't play them? Because we don't really value them in the first place. So if we don't value the players, then we don't have to play the players, put them on 15 minutes, circumvent a rule, and, you know, what does it matter? So I think it's rookie contracts. Sorry. Okay, I'll stop it. But yeah, rookie contracts as well. I just think it's also.
No, we're not doing rookie contracts today. We've done it before.
I think we're seeing teams just stockpiling players, and the league is moving to sort that in the next couple of seasons. Squad sizes are being limited. But yeah, okay, I'm going to move on from that. Yeah. Warning fines, and eventually that's it. You know.
All right,
this really annoyed me.
It's a pet hate, as you might say, a pet peeve on my side of the pond, but, you know. These things change. All right, we are going to move on really quickly. I see that we had a few comments come in. We'll touch on those really quickly when we get to the Ulgi Luis mailbag, which we're going to open up right on the other side of this break.
Ulgi Luis is your neighborhood British bar and cafe located in the old Jiro district of Seoul. Decorated in old English antiques and furniture for a true homely feel, you can enjoy homemade scones, cakes and afternoon tea during the day, and traditional British favorites like beef stew, English ale and a fine selection of wines at night. Available for private parties or simply an evening out, Ulgi Luis is sure to become your favourite neighbourhood pub. Be sure to mention K-League United at the bar during your visit and you'll get 10% off your bill.
Welcome back to the K-League United podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Walters, joined in the Ulgi Luis mailbag by Pete Hampshire.
Hello.
And to lead us through, he's had a break, so calm down about youth play. You're not wrong, by the way. You're not wrong. But anyway, it's Matthew Binns to lead us through the old Julius mailbag.
Okay, first one out the mailbag. We have a question from Matt Binns about rookie contract.
It looks like a Matthew in with Seoul? A player.
I'll find a way around it. We've got a question in on Patreon, and it is to me, but it isn't about youth players or rookie contracts. To be
not this week anyway.
No, it's from Kevin Watkins via Patreon, and I'm laughing because I'm reading it to myself at the moment. What is Matt's problem with Kyoto Purple Sanga when referring to John Book's new advisor? He's referring to he also asks, like, what's Watkin to ignore the biggest club he played for? Well, I mean, I did mention QPR when we talked about Park Ji-sung. I don't know what else we can say. Like, I mean, who else did he play for? I don't really know, like, you know, why people are getting upset about.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Anyway, it, yeah. Right.
Julian Sandras via Patreon. Hello, team. For your John Book subject, it's to me again. You talk about the absence of Lee Sung-gi and Kunimoto from the 18 players. Will they come back soon? Just a quick one on this, because injury news is gold dust in K-League. It wasn't mentioned before the match. It turns out after the match, both of them have got injuries. There's no news on the extent of the injury they've got at the moment, but no news probably means it's not significant. I think if it was significant, we'd probably hear something more serious. But yeah, I'd imagine they'll be back in the upcoming weeks. But yeah, I have no idea. Sometimes injury news is just whatever you find. But they're both not available for selection at the moment. Asri Furman via Twitter, are we all a little too optimistic about FC Seoul's chances given their lack of a reliable centre forward? Peter?
Well, Seoul's expected goals, we love a bit of XG, don't they? It was 0.4 against Jeonbuk. But I was looking at the stats from that game and Seoul did, they won more duels, more recoveries, more pass accuracy. So yeah, all that does point towards lacking a number nine. And does Park Chu-young fit the bill?
No. We know this is true. No. No. I mean, I think the way that they started, I think you've got to try Na Sang-ho on the wing with the young Wookiee, with Cho Young-wook on the other side. But it's just, it's not up there with the top strike forces in this league. And it's not good enough for FC Seoul. I don't understand how you can have Park Ji-young and all four goals that he scored last year as your number one option right now. To me, I think you either, if you're going to keep him in there, then you put Na Sang-ho next to him and you have two up top and see how that goes. But he's proven for years that he can't really be a hold up player. He can't do it on his own up there. He might still have something in the tank if he's got somebody with him. And that's what I thought they were going to do with Na Sang-ho. But if they're trying to fit three in up top, I don't see that happening. And this is yet another year where I feel like Cho Young-wook might be better off going on loan to K2 just to get some confidence, just to get some game time, to see the ball go in the back of the net. Matthew, you mentioned this in your post-match for Seoul. The window's still open, and personally, I think they got to do something. They really need to, because there's just too much quality everywhere else on the pitch for that team, and they just really need somebody.
We keep trying to push a message, don't we, for Felipe to Seoul, and he was an unexpected injury for Gwangju out of the lineup, a little niggling one. And that, you sometimes you see that in the end of the transfer window, don't you?
Where just a small little injury,
a little thigh strain, and the next thing you know, he's up front with Park Jin-sop again.
Yes, please.
Todd Wild via Twitter comes in with, who is worse in the air, Jeju Air or Lee Jong-hyop?
this goes back to the segment we had Michael on for. Michael's flights back from Busan was canceled, and so that's where this one comes from. But Lee Jong-hyop, oh man, he had a couple of golden opportunities to get Gyeongnam the lead, and wasn't doing it. I'm not gonna besmirch Jeju Air. If you're listening, Jeju Air, I would never say anything bad about you. In fact, I might say nice things about you if you wanted to. Anyway.
Then you can maybe you want to besmirch Michael, because the alternative question from Todd is, who is worse at catching things that move in the air, Michael Redmond or Anjun Soo?
No comment. I'll just leave that one.
Final question in from Dejon Citizen FC Brazil. If you could change one team from your original predictions after round one, which team would it be in K1 and K2?
Pete.
You're putting me under the bus first. Well, I'm actually quite happy with how my predictions are going, but I think I put Pohang down to sixth, and I was quite impressed with them at the weekend, so maybe push them above Suwon Blue Wings, perhaps into fifth. And for the K2, I put Eland fourth and Dejon third, so maybe swap those two around. Apart from that, pretty happy.
Yeah, I think Seoul being third might have been a little high in K1, but it's a long season. There is still a transfer window to go. So, you know, I'm not shaking after 1 week. I'm sticking to the table predictions for now. We'll see how it goes.
Go for Seoul Eland first and FC Seoul 12th, based on what I saw at the weekend. No, I'm going to stick at the moment. I'm a bit worried about Daegu in third. They did not impress me as much as I thought they would this weekend. No. But I'm going to stick with them. You know, Ulsan's top of the table after 1 week. We know it. You can't judge anything. Nothing lasts like this. That's the end of the mailbag.
Just got to get in your pot shots at Ulsan. All right. Well, as you notice there, a couple of those questions came in via Patreon, and Patreon is booming right now because we have Survivor back up and running there. If you do want to start, you can still join. You'll be down one life because we all had to put one on the line this past week. But if you want to get involved with that, that does start at the $1 tier. And speaking of patrons, we had quite a few come in this past week. So a very big welcome to Sophie S., Michael Boroff, Jared Sellers, Alex Holiday, Jonathan Olszewski. Thank you. Nailed it. Someone just known as Tok, T-O-K maybe. I don't know. And Nathan Vinda or Winder. I'm going to hope it's Vinda just because I like the way that sounds better. So sorry if it's not that, Nathan, but welcome to all those new patrons and their best shots at staying alive in Survivor. And Matthew, can you tell them what else they could get?
Well, we also have a few exclusive editorial pieces. There's some daily news briefings from Paul, although they are moving over to the weekend podcast, which you can catch every Friday on usual podcasting channels. We still have Saturdays coming out every Saturday, statistical pieces on a Saturday. That's the pun. Koreans overseas, and we have pub quiz questions. Apparently, I'm writing them. We will have pub quiz questions eventually. But there's also full player interviews. There's podcast extras, lots and lots of things going there. Discussions after matches, discussions before matches for patrons and writers. Tiers start as low as $1, but there's $3 and $5 tiers available.
That's right. And if you'd like to listen to this podcast live, you can do so every Thursday down on Football Nation Radio in Australia. And if you subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, or wherever you download your podcasts, because we're 1 week behind, I will say that you can still enter to win this. Got it with me this week. This Ansan Greeners kit from their inaugural season. I'm sure people are loving seeing Ansan and Anyang together at the same time from a Junum fan. I don't have enough shame to care about that. But anyway, if you want to win this, we'll give it one more week. So you can leave us a review for the podcast and you can get in on that. Next month, we're going to pick a different kit. So this is the very last chance to get involved with that. But for right now, for Pete Hampshire and Matthew Binns, I'm Ryan Walters. Thanks so much for listening.
Just